This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, powered by the Family Research Council, your embassy of faith, family, and freedom in the heart of our nation's capital. Now, here's your host, FRC President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this Tuesday edition of Washington Watch. Coming up, the state of the economy will be front and center tonight as President Trump delivers his State of the Union address before a joint session of Congress. Senator Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma will be there, and in just a moment, he'll be here with us. So don't go away. He's coming right up. And the House Intelligence Committee, which is investigating the Russian election meddling, voted along party lines last night to release a four-page classified memo on apparent abuses of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act by government agencies. Now, Democrats are going crazy. Why are Democrats in Congress against transparency? The president has 5 days to respond as to whether or not that will be released. Texas Congressman We'll have a Texas congressman here in just a moment to discuss that as well. Brian Babin will be here to discuss that memo and share his thoughts along with us. And as I headed to Guatemala last week, FRC's own religious liberty advocate, Travis Weber, was returning from Slovakia, where he was advancing FRC's issues in Central Europe. What are church leaders and religious liberty advocates looking to America to do? Do they see the potential of a sea change from the Trump administration on religious freedom? Travis Weber tells us a little more about that later here on Washington Watch. And we'll also pick up where we left off yesterday with your phone calls, talking about whether or not you will be watching the President's State of the Union address tonight. All that and more coming up here this evening on Washington Watch. By the way, you can join me after the President's State of the Union. I'll be out in front of the Capitol along with General Boykin giving you a rundown on the President's speech. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me at T. Perkins. Check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Okay, President Donald Trump will deliver his State of the Union address to Congress this evening. And no doubt he'll be taking a victory lap, celebrating some of the policy accomplishments achieved in the first year of his presidency and a revived economy. He will reportedly tout his economic progress in the speech and push for bipartisanship. With us now is Senator Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma. He's a U.S. Army veteran, and he is the senior member of the House, the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee and a senior member of the Senate Armed Services Committee. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, it's an exciting night tonight, Tony.
It is. Really, what are you anticipating to hear from the president?
Well, you know, I have my areas of kind of specialty that we've talked about before, but one is that I think he's going to skillfully be able to show the American people what has happened under the last administration to our military. I mean, I don't know how far he'll get into it, but just as an example of our ground brigades, only a third of them can be deployed because of maintenance problems. Our F-18s, only a third of the F-18s can be flown right now because of maintenance problems. Then, again, we've got people out there. On November the 28th, they demonstrated very clearly in North Korea that they can range the United States anywhere in mainland United States. And, you know, we've had several hearings, including one this morning, on that issue. So I think what I want to hear tonight, and I think we will hear, he's going to remind the American people as to this, what has happened to the military, and why that should be our number one concern. You know, it was kind of interesting all during the years that, his 8 years, that Obama had a policy. He said, we can't put additional money in the military to take care of sequestration or something else unless we put the same amount into the social programs or the non-defense programs. Well, that's not what our Constitution says. It's not what we have historically done. I can remember when we always spent over half of our revenues on defending America, and it's down to 15% now. So we have a serious problem there. The second thing I want to hear, because you might remember, and we got to remind people of this, Tony, because people don't remember this. When I'm on the stump talking, and very rarely do they recall what happened in the 9 years ago when Obama came into office. He said, "We've got to do something about infrastructure And so we're going to, I'm going to ask to, and they had control of the House and the Senate, and he controlled it all at that time. He said, I need $800 billion for infrastructure for stimulus. And so he ended up getting $836 billion. And you know how what percentage of that got to infrastructure and got to stimulus? It was 3%. Only 3% went to roads, highways, and bridges of $836 billion. Now, this president is going to be doing the same thing in terms of stressing the priority. The second priority of our country should be infrastructure, and he's going to be doing this in a very skillful way, and I hope that he is able to convey one of the most difficult things to convey, and that is this concept that you can increase your revenues by decreasing your tax rates. And oddly enough, and just as recently as today, they were touting this thing, saying how much money that was going to cost us for the tax cuts, when it was actually Kennedy back in 1962 who said we need more money for our Great Society programs, and the best way to increase revenue is to decrease tax rates. And remember, that was when he decreased the top tax rate. It went down from 90% to 70% and comparable rates below that. And that had the effect, 4 years later, of increasing our revenues directly tied to the tax cuts by 30%. And it happened again in 1981 with Reagan. So we know that that is the way, the result that we're going to have from the economy that's actually come alive. And for every 1% increase in economic activity, it increases your revenue by somewhere around $3 trillion. I throw that out, Tony, because there's so much misinformation about that, and there are actually some Democrats trying to sound like conservatives when they're opposing the tax cuts, knowing full well in their own minds that that will have the result of increasing, not decreasing. And the last thing that they want to be watching real carefully is to make sure that people are all aware of what's happening in this country right now with the job rates. All the indicators, Tony, are showing that we're just in really great shape. And if anybody questions that, I've got a website, inhofe.senate.gov, inhofe.senate.gov. If they access that, they can get a number of things, but two things they may want to have that are consistent with the message that we'll hear tonight are, number one, all of the regulations. There are now 70 regulations that came in under the Obama administration that we've either eliminated or in the final stages of eliminating. And I have them broken down so that it's very easy to understand. And, you know, the kind of people who are listening to your program, Tony, they're activists. They're people who really are concerned right. about what's happened to America. So I'd like to make sure that this gets into their hands. And the other thing that I have that they can pick up off the website is 134 corporations that have already taken huge actions in spreading the benefits of the tax reductions to middle America.
And that's for really two reasons. One is that the immediate effect of the tax reform, but also the anticipation of the positive growth that will come from the tax reforms. And we talk about this tax structure, economic growth. You know, we've talked about this before. We go back to 1986, the last time there was a major overhaul of the tax structure. That was under President Ronald Reagan. He also inherited a military that had been decimated under the previous administration coming out of the Vietnam War. But he rebuilt the military. He rebuilt the economy. He cast a vision for strength, peace through strength. Do you think that we're going to see similar themes and casting a vision from Donald Trump that we have to rebuild the military given the state of world affairs today?
Oh, he's already doing it. And, of course, through strength, that's he quotes Ronald Reagan quite a bit. And, yes, the answer is very positive, yes. And one reason is, and by the way, when this happened in the Carter administration, you remember we had the hollow force? I chair a committee right. called the Readiness Committee, and I had all the vice chiefs of all four services in there. They all agreed that we are now in the same situation we were with the Hall of Force back right following the Carter administration. Then, of course, the one that had to take us out of that mess was Ronald Reagan. It's exactly the same thing that's happening now, except, if anything, it's worse because now we're not looking at conventional warfare. We're looking at a guy in North Korea that demonstrated on November the 28th that he can actually range anywhere in the United States, continental United States, with a missile. He demonstrated that kind of range. So we are having hearings on that where the president's right in the middle of this thing. And when you start and think about the threat that that poses, just imagine it's as tragic as it was during 9/11. Just imagine if something were to hit a major city in the United States.
Yes, no question. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Senator Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma, my guest. Senator, okay, I think you're absolutely right. I think military experts have testified to such that we're living in a more dangerous time today than we were really at any time in modern history. But I want to go back to Reagan, what he inherited from Jimmy Carter, the military. I was post-Vietnam. The military was decimated from a morale standpoint, from a materiel standpoint as well. But I want to talk about the political environment. I think, of course, I wasn't in the political realm then. You were. You have some history here to analyze this by. Are we living in a more politically polarized time where it's harder to bring the parties together?
You know, there's some things. I often ask the question, you know, why can't we all get together and all that? Well, because sometime I'd love to have some extra time on your show and talk about the history of our political system. The way that we start instead we don't go right into the state conventions and the national conventions and all that. You start in someone's backyard. And this is how it all begins. You have Democrats on one side of the street, Republicans on the other side. And as they move up the ladder to the district convention, the state convention, the national convention, the ones who get the front row are the activists on both sides. So that's why by the time you get to the national convention, the Democrats who are there are all far left-wing extremists, and the Republicans are far right-wing. You don't get along on some of these issues. For example, we're concerned right now, and I know you're concerned with a bill there are three bills out there right now having to do with late-term abortions. That's something that the Democrats, it becomes a partisan issue by virtue of the fact that all the way through that system, from the living room to the National Convention, people have developed what they stand for. And certainly pro-life is a solid Republican, or gun control is a Democrat issue. They're all for gun control. And defending America, why should that be a partisan issue? But it is. And that's why my answer to your question is no, because we have some of these issues that are not going to, there's no flexibility in them. And of course, you and I look at it a little bit differently. Yeah. We look at it. We're right. We know we're right, and we're going to win on this because the vast majority of American people are on our side.
And we're not going to back. And we're not going to back down either. As you stand firm, Senator. As always, great to have you on the program, Senator Inhofe.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, folks. Don't go away. Coming back, Texas Congressman Brian Babin is here with a controversial memo that may soon be released. Don't go away.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, That's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As Senior Director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Hear Mr. Arnakis discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
All right, you're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins with the website tonyperkins.com. Check it out. All right, Republicans on the House Intelligence Committee voted late Monday to release a classified memo alleging that the FBI and the Justice Department violated the law, which prohibits the government from spying on Americans. Now, this is a part of the kind of an outgrowth of the Russian probe, the probe into the Russian tampering or messing with our election. Joining us now is Congressman Brian Babin. He has read the memo. He's a member of the committee, and unlike many of his Democratic counterparts, he knows exactly what the memo says. He's actually read it. He represents the 36th Congressional District of Texas, a long resident of East Texas. He is also a doctor, and he was a dentist in Woodville, Texas. Served as an airborne artilleryman in the Texas Army National Guard and the U.S. Army Reserves, and he serves on the House Committee on Transportation and Infrastructure as well. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much, Tony. Always good to be with you. And I have read that memo, but I have not read the Democrat memo. I want to make sure that's clear. I've not read the Democrat memo, but very familiar with the Republican one.
And many of your colleagues have read it as well and have expressed outrage and shock at what is contained in it to suggest that our government or to reveal that government agencies have violated the law and done surveillance on American citizens.
Well, I'm not allowed to talk about the contents of the memo, but I will just say this, Tony, that it is shocking. It is extremely concerning that you know, some of these kind of things would be going on in the United States of America, and I think that it really points to the fact that we need to have an independent investigation going on of these agencies.
Before we get into the process that must now that will now take place, since the committee yesterday voted to release this memo, I want to play a clip from last week from one of your colleagues, Jerry Nadler. He was on CNN. In fact, was on CNN on Aaron Burnett's show right before I was on talking about another subject. And what he said caught my attention because I could see right there they were laying the foundation to try to discredit this memo. Here's the clip from what Congressman Nadler had to say last week.
And I can't comment on this classified document except to say that it is profoundly misleading based on the source documents. It's a statement mostly of opinion and of distortions, written entirely by a partisan staff. And if you'd read the source documents, which are highly classified, and I don't think they're proposing to unclassify those, you'd know that it is highly misleading and deliberately misleading. Now, if they were to declassify the source documents, that would be a different story.
Of course, he goes on to say you cannot release the and declassify the source documents. So it's clear now what they're trying to say is that this memo that it appears could very well be released because the White House seems to support that move. Now they're saying, well, yes, but the source documents does not back that up. What do you say?
I say this. This what he's trying to do, as far as I'm concerned, is just blow smoke. He wants a smoke screen. I can tell you that although I'm not on the Intel committee, I have read the memo. I've talked to Chairman Nunes. This memo was written, and it is those are facts taken from released documents. And the so-called competing Democrat memo that the Democrats have come up with, there's quite a difference there. Tony, and number one, the Republican memo was released to every member of the Congress to read, including the Democrats. Today have we, and I have yet to read it, but I think we are able to go and read the Democrat memo. The difference was that they were trying to get this as a competitor to the Republican one. And there was the way they were both done was totally different, like night and day. And all I can tell you is that I have every reason to believe the memo that I've read from the Republicans, and I have yet to read the Democrat one. But just hearing Mr. Nadler and what he said, and seeing some of the things that Chairman Schiff from the Intel Committee have said, I have to take a lot of that with a grain of salt.
So, Congressman Bammann, what is the next step with the Intel Committee voting to release it? The president now has 5 days, I understand, to review the document and decide whether or not he will block that move and keep this from going public.
Well, you said it a while ago, Tony. You know, they've got to protect their sources. And I know the president loves this country, as I do. We don't want to do anything that would harm any intel sources, and I think that they're going to weigh that in the balance and make a determination of whether it would be proper and good for the nation to release the memo. I'm hoping they do. I think every American citizen should read the memo, and I think they would see. It would show them that what we've suspected for many months. There's a level of corruption, of unethical activity that has gone on in some of our agencies in the federal government, DOJ as well as the FBI. And I have a brother-in-law that was a former FBI agent. I know a lot of friends who serve in the FBI. These are great people, but some of these folks that are running the FBI. And have been for throughout the Obama years. I think we've got to look at them with a very jaundiced view for some of their activities.
All right, we'll be watching very closely for this memo to come out. Congressman Bammann, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Tony, God bless, and thank you for your ministry, my friend.
All right. Thank you. Congressman Brian Bammann of Texas. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. I think this memo comes out, I think there's going to be an outcry. And I think it's going to add fuel to the fire to bring about reform. Okay, when we come back, former Eastern Europe countries under the Iron Curtain, There's a difference between them and Western Europe. Next, we talk about it.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, folks, stand by. A little bit later, we're going to pick up where we left off yesterday. I'm going to be taking your phone calls in our next segment. Will you be listening to President Trump's State of the Union address tonight? So get ready. But first, FRC's Travis Weber, frequent guest on the program. He is the director of our Center for Religious Freedom, Liberty, here at the Family Research Council. As I was leaving for Guatemala, he was coming back from Eastern Europe, where he met with church leaders in Slovakia and other places there to discuss religious freedom in this country, our renewed focus on that and what it means to them. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony.
Okay. Where all'd you go?
So when I was over there, I was in Slovakia and the Czech Republic, and talked to a number of pastors from around those countries about the religious freedom issues we're facing here in the United States and my work at FRC, because some of the same cultural threats regarding religious freedom and LGBT issues, same-sex marriage, that we've dealt with, those issues are not there yet, but they could be coming there. And these pastors want to be engaged and understand the issues so they can be informed.
What's interesting about Eastern Europe is that these countries that when the wall came down in the late 80s, early 90s, when they began to taste freedom, they actually took the principles that America embraced. And, of course, that was, in the wake of Ronald Reagan. And they put those things into play, and they've prospered as a result.
Yes. And this is interesting, especially even going back to when they were still under communism in the 80s, the United States was their champion. Reagan fought for them against the communist authorities, and they're used to looking at the United States that way. But more recently, and we saw this under the Obama administration, the United States took positions on sexuality, progressive liberal positions that were at odds with the makeup of those countries, Poland, Slovakia, Hungary, and others, and using our ambassadors to push these values on these countries. They're not happy about it, and they started to distrust, is the United States on our side? Is the United States backing us here? At the same time that Russian leader Putin was trying to woo them as the protector of family values, this is a major problem. The United States needs to communicate to these people that we're with them on supporting the family and supporting religious freedom.
So just for the benefit of our listeners, we often hear about the secularization of Europe. There's a clear line of divide between Western Europe, which is more secular, and Eastern Europe, which holds to those more traditional values.
Very true. You know, and especially when we look at Poland, Slovakia, and Hungary, the Czech Republic slightly more liberal, but those four have a head alliance. And really, you know, those four at least are in what they would call Central Europe. You have others, Romania, other countries in agreement with them on family values, but very strong on the life issue, very strong on family, and holding to a historic Christian underpinning of their culture. They're standing at odds now with a lot of the institutions in Brussels and the European Union and Western Europe. And this is, you know, sort of an interesting situation we're in. I think we need to communicate to them, both pastors here and Christians here, and that I try to do that for these folks, but also our government needs to communicate to them that we're with them and we support them in supporting the family.
Travis, my sense from the places I've been overseas and, of course, the conversations I've had is that, you know, our government under Barack Obama had lurched so hard to the left that the momentum in the State Department with many of the folks representing us overseas is still moving leftward.
Yeah, I mean, this is a problem. The ambassadors, I was told by multiple people, that the ambassadors, the U.S. ambassadors under the Obama administration to these places, Slovakia, Hungary at least, and I know this is also has occurred in Poland, pushing the LGBT agenda in a way that's out of proportion, out of step with any sort of sense of proportionality in diplomatic relations and the role of foreign relations, in an aggressive way, really pushing this on these people. And it was used as a tool, the foreign relations mechanisms and our diplomacy was used as a tool to push this agenda and not build relations with those countries. And I think we really need to restore that.
So, Travis Weber, are they anticipating kind of maybe a sea change toward religious freedom and values under the Trump administration?
I think they're hoping for that. You know, I told them what we were doing on our issues of life and religious liberty and family here in the United States. I communicated the good things the Trump administration has done on those issues, and explain that we're continuing to try to advance our issues, working with the administration here. And they were hopeful, too, with definitely the change from President Obama. They're hopeful. And I think this is a real opportunity for the United States to communicate to these people that we still stand with them as we stood with them under Reagan.
So did the pastors and the other religious leaders you met with there, did they send you back with a message?
They didn't send me back with this specific message, but, they just really appreciate us, what we're doing here. They appreciate Christians in the United States standing with them as fellow believers and strengthening them, but also as we seek to shape the culture for good.
All right. Travis Weber, world traveler and director of FRC's Center for Religious Liberty. All right, folks, when we come back, we're going to go to the phone lines and going to hear from you. We're going to pick up where we left off last night. Will you be listening, watching the President's State of the Union address? All right, get ready. 866-372-7234. Your phone calls when we return here on Washington Watch.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand, brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
I'm Tony Perkins, and you are listening to Washington Watch, the website, tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at tperkins. All right, here's what we're going to talk about. We're going to pick up where we left off last night. A lot of you did not get through. Will you be listening to the president's State of the Union address tonight? I'm curious to know. How many are interested? How many are going to be listening? What are you hoping he's going to talk about? 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234, the number to call to get in on the conversation this afternoon. And we're going to go straight to my hometown of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, where Ricky is on the line. Ricky, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. I'd like to listen. I hope I can catch. I live in Clinton, but I hope I catch a single. But, I was a strong Cruz supporter of the primaries. But I'll tell you, ever since Cruz threw Judge Roy Moore under the bus, I was severely disappointed. And I'm so glad that Trump got elected because, the dude's got backbone. All these preachers got backbone, much less politicians. And, he could care less what anybody thinks about it. He's going to sell it like it is, and he's going to keep his word. So I'm 100% behind Trump now, and everything – that the Democrats accuse him of, that's what they're guilty of themselves under Barack Obama. Like they got the gall to point out, Trump. But anyhow, ever since Cruz, I remember reading about his opponent in Texas going to run against him and said, Cruz didn't say nothing about Judge Roy Moore, so he must be okay for that. And boy, the next day, that's when Cruz came out. Judge Roy Moore needs to be criminally investigated, and I couldn't believe Cruz said that. So, Cruz would have been, what do people think about what I say, like every other politician. So, thank God, that Trump got elected because he's doing more for the cause of Christianity than anybody would have had probably since Reagan.
I think a lot of people see it that way, that he's had backbone to stand up. As you pointed out, you weren't an early supporter of his. I wasn't either. And when it came down, though, to him and Hillary Clinton, there really wasn't much of a choice. But what made it easier and what I think drew conservatives like yourself, evangelicals, social conservatives, Catholics out to vote for him, was that he essentially made a deal with them. I'm going to appoint pro-life justices. I'm going to pick a known conservative running mate. And he wrapped himself in the most conservative party platform in history. And as you just pointed out, Ricky, he's actually been doing it. And he has stood up to the left. So I think that's why he still, and the polling shows this, he still has his base of support that elected him. And my prediction is, and what I've said, if he continues to do what he's doing, he will retain that support. All right, let's go to Dana in Missouri. Dana, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. I just want to quickly say thank you so much for your ministry, and we appreciate everything you're doing in other ministries like yours to help save our Constitution and our religious freedom. I just wanted to say that, yes, we don't watch any TV at all anymore, but we will watch the State of the Union, and we will not be watching the Super Bowl.
All right.
And I do not agree with Barack at all, but I think maybe, you know, this is just my opinion, that the Lord brought him there just to wake this nation up, because it did a good job, and hopefully they will not fall asleep again.
Yeah, unfortunately, you might be right. I mean, certainly it has been a wake-up call for the nation, but I think in some ways we ran off the road and took out a few mailboxes and blew a couple of tires while we were asleep at the wheel, because he has done his policies have done tremendous damage to the nation. Now, I give credit to Donald Trump, and I've said this before. He's unlike any of his previous Republican counterparts. He's actually been trying to undo the policies of Barack Obama, where most Republicans just kind of hit the pause button. They never try to undo what their predecessor did, because that's too controversial. So, Dana, thank you so much for listening. Glad to have you as a part of the Washington Watch audience. Let's go to let's stay in Missouri and let's talk to Melvin. Melvin, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, good afternoon. I appreciate your show. I just wanted to comment. A lot of people say they don't like President Trump because of his past. But, you know, I think often of what they would have thought of Paul's past or Peter's past, you know, and they very likely could have done some very unorthodox ways to get across the gospel. And I think if that gives the president a chance, then he'll do a good job.
All right, Melvin, appreciate the call. Here's what concerns me, is that they're bringing up the president's past, which we know about and disagree with. But they're saying, well, this happened 10 years ago, so why are you still supporting him? Well, I mean, we knew that he had problems when we supported him.
Right.
We supported him because it was between him and Hillary Clinton. And Hillary Clinton and the policies that she has promoted, I mean, they were anathema to Christians, evangelicals.
Exactly.
And he's actually promised to do the things that we would like to see done, and he's been doing it. So why, nothing's changed since the election. Why should our view of him change?
Right, exactly.
That's the question I ask. All right, Melvin, thanks so much for listening and calling in today. Let's go to Tennessee, Memphis, Tennessee, where John is listening. John, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks, Tony. Appreciate you taking my call. I am going to watch the State of the Union tonight, which will be the first one I've watched in 8 or 9 years, and this is really the reason I really feel that there's an excellent chance to not be lied to tonight and to actually get an accurate picture of the State of the Union and exactly how things are, because we know we don't get the straight news on any mainstream news front, and I'm sure there'll be some wild coverage of that tonight, to say the least. And it's kind of a shame that that has to be, or that it is. I mean, America's front and center. There'll be people from around the world tuning in to watch this, and we're going to have one political party have probably half of them won't show up, or or whatever, and it's just kind of embarrassing. But I do feel it's a good opportunity not to be lied to for the first time in a long time.
Well, thank you, John. Appreciate you calling in. I think it will provide the talking heads from the liberal media, plenty to talk about over the next few days. I mean, guarantee you in the morning they'll be out with all their list about this wasn't accurate, this wasn't accurate, or this was, it's always fascinating to watch. Let's go to Kansas, where Angie is listening. Angie, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you, and thank you for your show.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you.
I just wanted to say that I will not be watching tonight. I've gotten to the point where I am a evangelical Christian, conservative, but I don't believe what Trump says. I feel like, that his character problems are still the same. And we can see these when we look at his Twitter account. You know, Twitter inherently isn't a bad thing. If he went on there daily and said, God bless America, we think that was great. What he goes on there and does is he belittles people. He says things that if someone in our church did, we would be taking people forward by ourselves and then in a group to talk to them about their behavior. And then we'd be told they're not, they need to even go elsewhere. And I just, I'm so scared that one thing people say about Christianity all the time is, oh, you're a bunch of hypocrites. And, that people are going to say, how can we support a man who continually behaves in such an abhorrent way and daily insults people? And, I know that he throws in good things too, but about it seems like, he's supporting Israel, but yet he also supports things that seem, very racist, and I just don't know how to support this man anymore.
Well, Angie, I want to talk because I think you you're not alone. Okay, there's other folks out there that have that same maybe internal conflict. So I kind of when you look at it, how do you want to see? I mean, what do you want to see this president do? Well, I mean, what would be ideal from your perspective?
To act presidential, to act as a leader of the free world, to clean up, the mess that started back with Clinton, where the presidency was an honorable position and that we were honored in the world and we were a world leader. And now it seems like a joke to me. You don't want your child to be a president because they're liars, they're philanderers. Yes, they're
human. Well, we kind of got to go back a ways to find when the office of the president was the president conducted himself in a way that was considered to be respectful of the office. Now, let me ask you, how do you think we can get the president to that point?
I don't know that he has it in him. That's the thing, is that I truly think that a character flaw that may just be so deeply seated that we just have to hope that Ryan and some people around him are doing what it sounds like they might be doing and trying to keep him under thumb and from messing things up too bad.
Okay, so then I get that. But what's the alternative then?
I'm sorry. I mean, to me, I wish I had, I wish I had a better solution, and I don't. And I think probably a lot of people listening think I sound very naive, and I probably do.
No, you not at all. Not at all. I'm glad you called in and to have this conversation because, again, I don't think you're alone, okay? I think there are other people that are conflicted about this. But here's where we are, okay? The political realm is far from perfect, and it certainly is not reflective. Our culture as a whole is not reflective of the values that we hold as evangelical Christians. This process is filled with with folks that don't necessarily share this view. Although I will say, of the 17 candidates that were running in this last election, there were a number of evangelical Christians that had the support of a lot of Christians. I mean, I was aggressively behind one of his competitors, but it came down to a point where he was the only one left, him and Hillary Clinton. And he was not my first choice. I'm sure he wasn't your first choice, and he wasn't the first choice of a lot of evangelicals. No. But he basically said, this is what I'll do if you will give your support to me or if you'll support me. And he said, I'm going to appoint pro-life justices. I'm going to pick a known running mate that's conservative and has a record, and I'm going to and he wrapped himself in the party platform, which is the most conservative platform in party history. I helped write it. And he's followed through on those things. So I agree with you that it's far from perfect, but I will say that the alternative at this point is to disengage, to be discouraged because of the flaws that you pointed out, rightfully so. I'm not contesting that. I wish he would put up Twitter. But the alternative is to back away, allow the more liberal mindset to prevail, lose Congress, impeach him, knock him out, derail his agenda, and then we see a pick that we'll see Congress, you know, fall off the rails. We'll see the next election. The Democrats will pick up where Barack Obama left off. We see religious liberty lost in this country. So, I mean, we're never going to have the ideal situation, but I think that the evidence in terms of the policies that have come forth from this administration are more in line with, Angie, what you would like to see in terms of the policy outcomes, not necessarily personnel doing them, than we have seen in any time in recent history. So here's what I would say, Angie, and first off, thanks for listening and calling. I would say pray. Pray for this president. Pray that that he would have a change of heart with, the way he treats other people and the way he communicates those things, that it would be in keeping with the positive policies that have been come forth from his administration in the last 12 months. But, Angie, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening and being very honest and candid. Folks, sorry, we're out of time. We're not going to get to the rest of the calls, but I thought it was very important to have that conversation with Angie. Because, again, I don't think she's alone. I think there's other folks out there that are conflicted. But look, this president, since he gained the support of evangelicals and won the election, has been doing what he said he was going to do. All right? We can use our influence to try to help move him in the right direction in terms of how he conducts himself in office. We can pray for him, and we can continue to help him advance policies that are good for America. So don't get discouraged, okay? All right, folks, check us out tonight. Facebook Live, we'll be talking about the State of the Union address right after the State of the Union address. Until next time, I leave you with the words of the Apostle Paul. When you've done everything you can do to stand, you got to keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. Again, that's 1-866-372-7234. 372-7234.